Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. If you love great games and a little extra excitement to your day, I got something fun for you. Chumba Casino and I have teamed up to create an exclusive online social casino game. It's called Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's fun and free to play, just like all your favorites from Chumba Casino. And every spin brings 10,000 ways to keep the good times going. Check it out and play for free today at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number 2 of 3, live right here on this Wednesday on the Early Line on Sports Grid. He is Donnie. I am Ben. Thank you for joining us all across the Spiz Grizz Network. Donnie, a ton that we will get into here over these next 2 hours. But in hour number 2, we'll have some NFL focus. We'll talk some college football, the Saturday slate in the SEC and beyond for week number 8. But Donnie, the people can't get enough of us breaking down a new season in the association. 1 week from right now, the NBA season will already be underway after a doubleheader on opening night. The defending champs, the Nuggets, will hang the banner against the LA Lakers. And then elsewhere in Northern California, it's the Warriors and the Suns. Donnie, the NBA season is on the horizon. Those are 4 Western Conference teams. We start off this second hour by looking at the East, where a ton of changes have happened this offseason, and some things have stayed the same despite the fact we thought changes were coming. Donnie, a ton to get to here in hour number 2.
Yeah, a ton to get to is right here. And also, keeping track of all the NBA superstars that have changed team and also how quickly they can acclimate to their new franchises, new fan bases, and new teammates here. It'll be a lot of fun to watch, but we sort of brought it up yesterday. There's a lot of teams that are going to be in the mix to win a championship, which sometimes in the NBA, it's like, oh, well, Golden State Warriors going to run away with this thing. Not the case this year. Looking forward to it a lot, Ben.
No. Yeah, big games on a week from Wednesday to DRS as really most of the league gets underway exactly 7 days from right now. So let's look at the Eastern Conference title odds and what it means for the NBA championship as well. Of course, just about 3 weeks ago, Donnie, Damian Lillard was traded from Portland, not to Miami, but to Milwaukee. In exchange for Dame, back to Portland, the Bucks send Drew Holiday, who was not in the Rose City for very long. He was then shipped out to Boston in a deal to solidify the backcourt for the Celtics. The Bucks were the favorites, Donnie, of course, when Dame joined Giannis. But then, more reinforcements for Boston. Drew Holiday makes his way there. They're now co-favorites to win the East. The Bucks at plus 175. The C's at also plus 175. Donnie, we haven't played a single minute of NBA basketball yet in this regular season, and you can already see a clear divide and a clear tier of two atop the Eastern Conference. That was the story all year long last year in the NBA. We are already seeing that before 2023-24 gets underway.
This is the way it's supposed to be, though. If we're taking a look at the Bucks and the Celtics here, by far and away, the better two teams here in the conference here. So welcome in the radio audience. You're watching and listening live here to the Early Line on a Wednesday morning edition. Ben Stevens, Donnie Wrightside, SiriusXM Channel 159, as we break down some of the who we think are going to win the conferences here in the NBA. But the Bucks plus 175, the Celtics plus 175, that makes the most sense here. Now, granted, also, how are they going to actually approach their regular seasons? Because the one thing we do know, when you get to the NBA playoffs, what would you rather do? Have the deciding game in Milwaukee or have the deciding game 7 for the Boston Celtics at the TD Garden? That's what's going to be the case, yeah. Because we see it play out two different ways so many times. Hey, don't worry about seeding. Just get your superstars healthy, which means they don't play every game they need to play, and maybe the Bucks take down the seed number 1 and the Celtics take down the 3rd seed or the 4th seed or vice versa here. That's what I'm looking for. But if we turn their injuries off, we expect to get what we get. It's going to be the Bucks and the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals, head and shoulders above, if they stay healthy, the rest of the conference.
Yeah, Donnie, we expected that to be the case last year as well. Of course, Giannis was injured in the opening series against the Miami Heat, and the Heat made it to their third out of four NBA Eastern Conference Finals. Now, Donnie, let's talk about Miami, because for me, that's where this odds list begins. The Heat moved all the way up the board to a price less than 5-1 when the expectation was Damian Lillard was on his way to Miami. Of course, when Dame requested the trade from the Blazers earlier this summer, he didn't list multiple places he would be interested in going. It was only one team. It was only one franchise. In South Beach, it was the Miami Heat. So the odds makers were like, okay, well, Dame's going to Miami. We'll make their price short in anticipation that he joins the Heat. Of course, he never did. It left Jimmy Butler emo. And now it's a different story for the Heat once again. Not expected to contend necessarily for an Eastern Conference crown. So they were less than 5-1, Donnie. Now back to an 11-1 number in the Eastern Conference. That's the fifth best price behind both the Cavaliers and the Sixers.
Yeah, and you're taking a look, and that's the way it should be here. Now, granted, as we look at the Bucks and the Celtics, who talent-wise, superstar-wise, they're the cream of the crop in the East, but they're still quality ball clubs here. The Cavaliers have a good young nucleus here. If the Philadelphia 76ers and James Harden decides to show up and goes, you know what? It's not so bad playing in Philadelphia. They added Oubre in the offseason to go with Maxey and Embiid. That's not a bad basketball team here. And the same thing with the Miami Heat is you talk to them at 11-1. This team was right there at the end of the season. You know they're probably going to make a move or two here, but as long as Jimmy Butler is healthy for the season, that Heat culture is going to continue here. It just looks at the start of the season. If we know and understand the superstar talent in the NBA, look, the Bucks are loaded. The Celtics are loaded. That's usually what wins in the NBA. Talent typically wins out. We just don't know which one of those two teams is actually going to win the conference. And quite frankly, neither does the FanDuel Sportsbook, as they're both priced at a plus 175 price. But I just want to just leave out the second tier here, but just heading into the season, it just looks clear cut, which we'll get to the West. But the East for me, yeah, it's the Bucks and the Celtics and everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can see that tier of two, Donnie. The win totals are similar. 54.5 for Boston, 53.5 for Milwaukee. The over is even money for Boston's win total of 54.5. 53.5 is pretty even juice on both sides for the Bucks. But the same price to win the East, the same price to be the Eastern Conference's number one seed, the same price for both Milwaukee and Boston as co-favorites, not only to win the Eastern Conference crown, but the NBA title as well at +380. Speaking of gardens, it's not TD Garden, but Madison Square Garden 1 week from today, DRS, where the Celtics were open up their season against the New York Knicks. Of course, a playoff team a year ago for the Knickerbockers, winning a playoff series. They are in that game against Boston, though, at home, a 2.5-point underdog to start off 2023-24.
By the way, was that the graphic we were just looking at? That said, was that correct? Minus 10 Celtics? So, yeah, so that, tee me up again on that, because I was looking at the monitor itself there. So we had a minus 10. It's a 2.5-point favorite here. Give me the Celtics all day long.
Come on
now. Celtics-Knicks, minus 2.5. And is the game at Boston or is the game in New York?
Yeah. The game is in New York.
Man.
I'm trying to even find out where that would come from, but there's not a preseason. The Knicks play in preseason basketball tonight in the Garden, but they play the Wizards. They're a 5.5-point favorite. I don't know. Always keeping us on our toes. Donnie, we're going to talk about the Sixers at some point as well. Joel Embiid does not believe Philadelphia is all that far behind the Celtics and the Bucks. But, of course, the limit now for Philadelphia is not being a playoff team. It's minus 1,200 for that to be the case. But to win an Eastern Conference crown. Maybe a little bit more basketball talk up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We are back live right here on this Wednesday on the early line. Exactly 1 week from today, DRS, most of the association starts their NBA season. Of course, we have a doubleheader on opening night 6 days from now on the first Tuesday of the year, but a ton of the league elsewhere in action on a Wednesday. And again, the Boston Celtics are only a 2.5-point favorite on the road in Madison Square Garden, not all that far away from us here in Midtown Manhattan, against the New York Knicks. So, Donnie, that's the first game of the year for the C's. We know the Celtics and the Bucks are in a tier of their own, according to the odds makers, both plus 175 as co-favorites to win the East. There's been a lot of conversation this offseason about trade requests that have not happened. Dame was traded, but not to his original preferred destination in Miami. The Heat have now moved back on the board, 11-1, the fifth best price, to win the Eastern Conference crown. Donnie, the Philadelphia 76ers are 10-1, the fourth best number to win the East. And still, as of this moment, James Harden is a member of the 76ers. Donnie, where do you think Philly is entering 2023-24?
In limbo, and that's the worst place to be in the NBA. You have maybe the best player in the NBA, crowned MVP last year, that's coming into a season, and quite frankly, not all that happy because he sees other teams in his conference getting better and his team fighting with James Harden. Now, if you say to yourself, James Harden's going to come back and be healthy, Kelly Oubre, Tyrese Maxey, Joel Embiid, yeah, you can throw your hat in the ring and say, if things go well for us this year, we can be competitive. Yeah. But I've looked at it the same way, Ben, since the offseason ended, when it looked like James Harden was supposed to be getting traded. Maybe they were in on Damian Lillard, or maybe making a move for another superstar player. I always thought this season, if it didn't work in their direction, you keep Harden for one more year, you open up that space as a max contract, and also some other guys come off the books for the Philadelphia 76ers, which includes Tobias Harris, and then away you go. But now it looks like it's a lost cause altogether, which my only complaint would be is, how much are you willing to play Joel Embiid? You can't just go to him and say, hey, by the way, I'd love to get 30 games out of this year, sit the rest of the way. Players don't want that. They want their statistics, they want to play in their games, and they want to be competitive. But we do know, as a big man in the NBA, that window isn't going to be as long as a window for a 6'2", 6'3", 6'4 guard here. So if you waste Joel Embiid and he plays well over 75 games this year, and you finish up with the sixth seed, and you get bounced in round number one, what did you actually do? The Sixers are in limbo, not a great place to be in the NBA.
Certainly not, DRS. And here's where things stand for the Beard and Philadelphia. Of course, earlier in the summer, he opted in to his contract player option for this upcoming season. But with the full intention of opting in, Philadelphia would return the favor and send him to his preferred destination that he listed as the LA Clippers. But nothing has happened. He has remained in Philadelphia. Of course, on his media tour in China a few months ago, he called Daryl Morey a liar. He was asked if there was any chance to repair the relationship between the two, and he said no, it's done. As of yesterday, further reporting that a trade with the Clippers is unlikely. The Sixers want Terrence Mann in return. They're not going to get Terrence Mann. So because of that, the asking price on behalf of Philly is too high. The expectation now is, Donnie, one way or another, James Harden is going to remain in Philly. And it should be noted, there's a few coaching changes this offseason. It's not Doc Rivers anymore in Philadelphia. It's Nick Nurse, who leaves Toronto and comes to Philly. For Milwaukee, it's not Mike Budenholzer. It's Adrian Griffin, a first-time head coach in the NBA. Joe Mazzulla, year number two in Boston. Ime Udoka, now in Houston. But I think one of the best coaching moves of the offseason, Donnie, was Mazzulla getting coveted assistant coach Sam Cassell, former longtime NBA point guard as well, providing some of that veteran experience on the bench. And again, when you look at Philly, it's not a matter of being a playoff team. The Sixers are going to be there. They might probably host a playoff series to start the year as well as the 3 or 4 seed in the Eastern Conference. It's minus 1,200 DRS for the 76ers to see the NBA playoffs, but it's getting past the second round. It's getting past the conference semifinals, something they haven't done since Allen Iverson was in Philadelphia.
By the way, I like the evolution of the Sixers, you know, head coaching staff here, as we like to say. Brett Brown, who was brought in for the tank. There's a clear reason why he was brought in specifically for the tank. He was a nice guy, but couldn't coach his way out of a paper bag. You move up to Doc Rivers, who's been around the NBA, and they brought that team to a certain limit. I think Nick Nurse, much more of an X's and O's guys. I love that move here. And it's interesting because they brought Nurse in the first press conference. He goes, I can't wait to have James Harden on my basketball team. So you thought that would have tried to mend those fences, but apparently behind the scenes, if you're telling a superstar athlete, take a little bit less this year, we'll make it up on the back end. Ooh, no, I never said that. Now we don't even want to sign you to a long-term deal, but why don't you come into camp and be happy and play basketball? That's the James Harden saga with Daryl Morey here. So from a Sixers perspective here, if everybody comes back and it's harmonious, the season will be okay for them. I don't have championship aspirations, and yes, it is about getting to the second round, which quite frankly, they'll probably line up against the Bucks or the Celtics at round number two, get knocked out again, and then the questions will arise there for the Philadelphia 76ers. Decent season on the horizon. Can be better if Harden plays and is happy, but we don't see any of that coming soon here.
Yeah, the efficiency for James Harden is under question, but he was third in the NBA in assists a season ago. There is talent elsewhere, of course. Tyrese Maxey, the young superstar, and you have the reigning NBA MVP in Joel Embiid. So Nick Nurse leaves Toronto after the Raptors were knocked out by the Bulls in the play-in tournament last year. Darko Rajakovic is now the new head coach in Toronto. He was a former assistant on the Memphis Grizzlies under Taylor Jenkins. So that is the coaching carousel. Monty Williams leaves Phoenix. Frank Vogel is in the desert. Monty Williams is in Detroit with a young Pistons roster. And I'll just say this right now, Donnie, maybe I'll take a shot. I believe in this young Pistons core. They're 12-1 to make the Eastern Conference playoffs, not minus 1,200 like Philadelphia, but plus 1,200. Maybe there's a flyer on Detroit, just something to consider as the NBA season is under a week away. So, Donnie, we mentioned a lot of the league underway exactly 1 week from right now, but a marquee matchup in the Eastern Conference comes on night number three, Thursday night in Milwaukee. The Bucks host the 76ers in the opener for both of these two teams. Milwaukee, a 5.5-point favorite at home. That line, Donnie Wrightside, is spot on correct.
Looks light to me at this point here. And that's supposed to be a Dame party there. Get the party popping. You got a lot more talent there in Milwaukee. A lot more expectations on the season. We'll see what we get out of the Philadelphia 76ers. But early line reading here, who's not taking the Bucks at that price?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's not the biggest spread in the world. You know Milwaukee is going to be inspired to start this season. Having Damian Lillard on the court alongside Giannis Antetokounmpo and Chris Middleton. Again, a 5.5-point spread for opening night for the Bucks as they host the Philadelphia 76ers. So, DRS, when you look around the Eastern Conference, the team we have mentioned but we haven't really broken down, it's the Miami Heat. You talked about it the second the trade happened, when Dame was shipped to Milwaukee, not to Miami. I mentioned the odds, a 5-1 number to win the East, the second best price in the Eastern Conference, only behind Boston at the time. It was a 10-1 price on Miami to win the NBA championship, because if Damian Lillard was going to pair alongside Jimmy Butler, knowing Heat culture, knowing what this team had accomplished with less, three of the last four Eastern Conference finals the Heat had been in, two of the last four NBA finals the Heat had appeared in. All of that, though, Donnie, wiped out when Dame was traded to Milwaukee, another Eastern Conference team. What do you think the outlook is like for the Heat in 2023-24?
Still a quality team. They'll be in the playoffs. You know, as long as you get Jimmy Butler and playoff Jimmy, which he was in the first two rounds, at least last year, the NBA playoffs, they can do some damage. Lowry, Hero, Richardson, Butler, and Adebayo, they'll be formidable, but we are expecting them to take the next step, and I think they were as well, which includes roster rebuild, which would have had superstar Damian Lillard coming to town and maybe Tyler Hero on the move here. That didn't happen. We'll see where Jimmy Butler wants, or is Jimmy Butler saying, enough Heat culture at the trade deadline, just get me out of here. I want a Dame. You couldn't deliver. What's next?
Yeah, I think Jimmy's okay. I think the emo thing on media day, some of the ideas of, hey, look into the Bucks, they've been tampering. It's Jimmy Butler having fun. He's one of the best personalities in the NBA. Tyler Hero, the spurned off guard, is back. Yet again, he has always been rumored in any trade Miami is going to make. The Heat 11-1, the fifth best price to win the Eastern Conference. College football breakdowns coming your way next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to the Early Line, live right here on this Wednesday, week 8 of the college football season already underway with some midweek Conference USA action. But week 8 in the third Saturday in October is significant in the SEC, and some significant SEC injury news for the two-time defending national title winners, the Georgia Bulldogs, coming our way yesterday. So here on TEL on this Wednesday, I am Ben, he is Donnie, and the man in the middle is Mark Zinno. He is known as the mouth in the South. But Zinno, before we get your SEC picks, we have to talk a little bit about Brock Bowers. Let's do that right here, right now. Georgia is on the bye week. They are off this week after another disappointing performance against the number last weekend in Nashville against Vandy. Georgia remains unbeaten, sure. They're a perfect 7-0, but they came nowhere close to covering as a 32.5-point favorite against the Doors, winning by 17. And you add injury to the insult of not covering the number, Brock Bowers injuring his ankle, Mark. He is expected to be sidelined for 4 to 6 weeks. How significant is that for Georgia to lose their outstanding tight end?
Well, after Florida, they're going to go through a three-game gauntlet of Missouri, Ole Miss, and Tennessee. They don't beat Auburn without Brock Bowers. They don't win that game, period. And he's that pivotal to their offense. He's seeing a bigger lion's share of the targets in the passing game. Carson Beck obviously feels very comfortable with him as far as a reliable target, and he's the worst, you know, mismatch for any defense in college football. Now, that said, I don't know anybody objectively who isn't wearing red and black that thinks that Brock Bowers should ever take another snap in college football, period. Go sit down. Go get the bag. You've got two national championships. You're slated to be what we think would be a top five pick at this point in time. What does Brock Bowers have left to prove in college football? He does not need to take another snap. If I was in Brock Bowers' crew, I would have advised him against the surgery. I would have sat out the rest of the year and started preparing for the combine. That's the end of the conversation. I mean, Georgia has this long history of players coming back to play, dating all the way back to Nick Chubb, you know, coming back for an extra year when he could have gone pro. We've seen it time and time again. George Pickens did it, and Brock Bowers is going to do it. I think it's a terrible decision on his part, and that long history could be a very short one if he comes back and gets hurt again and then ruins his chances at the NFL draft of being inside a top 10 pick, because now you're talking about millions of dollars that he is foregoing down the road. We've never scoffed at any other player who's sat out before and said, you know what, I'm just going to focus on the NFL, and that's my decision, and everybody's respected it. People will respect Brock Bowers' decision to come back. I just totally categorically disagree with it.
Mark, let me ask you a question about the SEC as a whole, because we're looking at the East, and Georgia is 4-0 right now on top of the standings. As you pointed out, that mini gauntlet coming ahead, which also probably can be Florida here coming up in that neutral site game that they're going to play in Jacksonville. Is there a chance in your mind that Georgia could have two regular season losses now without Brock Bowers, or are we making up again? Look, Donnie, he's a tight end. Come on now. They can still win football games. They'll be just fine. But in your mind, Mark, any chance for slippage not one time, but two times in the regular season?
I wouldn't go to the window on betting two losses. I would go to the window on betting one. I've told you guys all year long that I felt like Georgia was going to drop a game before the SEC championship game, and I think that's still something that's going to happen. Again, they can't separate from Vanderbilt, for crying out loud. I mean, what is going on? Clearly, the Kentucky matchup was the outlier here. Georgia hasn't separated from anybody. The real question is, Donnie, is really, in reality, there are only two offenses left that could really do it, and that's Missouri and Ole Miss. The problem is both of those games are in Athens. Right, the one game that they have to go on the road is in Rocky Top in Tennessee, and I don't think very highly of Joe Milton and what this Tennessee offense is, and I won't get too far ahead of my SEC picks here, but you know where we're going in that game. So all that said, it's just going to be very tough here for a team to upset Georgia, and I think Missouri and Ole Miss are probably the two that they really need to worry about the most.
And that's the idea for the Georgia Bulldogs right now. Can they go perfect in the regular season? The schedule is soft, but it gets to its hardest peak, certainly here, as the end of October comes and the beginning of November. Yes, a tight end only in Brock Bowers, but one of their main offensive pieces, who was a huge part of the budding offensive identity in Athens, with Brock Bowers throwing for, Carson Beck throwing for 300 or more yards in three consecutive games. Brock Bowers had at least 121 receiving yards in all three of those victories for the Georgia Bulldogs. You know, to your point, if Georgia does drop a game here in the regular season ahead of Atlanta in the SEC championship game, if they reach that point, I also think that will work to influence the decision for Brock Bowers if he comes back potentially for an SEC title game. That's probably on the early side of this timeline, or maybe a college football playoff run once again, as the Dogs and Kirby Smart looking to make it three straight atop as a national championship winner in college football. All right, now to the game breakdowns of the third Saturday in October. For week number 8, he's the mouth in the South. That's Mark Zeno, and these are his SEC picks. So, Zeno, you mentioned the Tennessee Volunteers and the Alabama Crimson Tide. A top 20 showdown in Tuscaloosa on Saturday, the third Saturday in October, as this rivalry is known. Zeno, we know what happened last year on Rocky Top. Tennessee wins by 3, snapping a 15-game losing skid to the Crimson Tide. The celebration at Neyland Stadium was as good as you will find. The cigar puff still radiates in the air in Knoxville, Tennessee, and they had to replace the goalpost because they went floating in the river. So, Zeno, that was last year in 2022. And prior to that, Alabama was dominant. 15 consecutive victories. What do you make of this year's version in 2023 in Bryant Denny on Saturday?
The ultimate revenge spot for Nick Saban and the Crimson Tide here. And look, I don't know what, you know, Nick Saban really is going to put into this revenge whole thing. I think he's just focused more on his team this year and getting them better and better. But what he's really focused on is making this defense one of the best in the country. Last year, the Vols ran for 232 yards on the number one rush D in the SEC. But, you know, it's a game here where, manifestly, I don't think Tennessee can score. I just flat out don't. I mean, look at their game last week against Texas A&M. The one touchdown they had came from a special teams touchdown. Like, how do you really expect this Tennessee team without Hendon Hooker and a clear downgrade in Joe Milton to score? I've already locked in Tennessee's team total under 18.5. I don't know if Alabama's offense is going to be that great. I don't necessarily think it has to be. But if Tennessee scores more than 17 in this game on the road in Tuscaloosa with revenge on the mind of these players, whoo, man, that would be a feat in and of itself. Tennessee under team total 18.5 is the play for me.
Ole Miss Auburn on the Plains Saturday night, 7 o'clock start here. We take a look at this game at the FanDuel Sportsbook. Mark opened up 6.5, currently still sitting at 6.5. A total of 55.5 in this ballgame. Auburn at home looking for their first SEC win of the season. Ole Miss has obviously ideas of possibly still getting to the SEC championship game. What gives between Ole Miss and Auburn for you, Mark?
I mean, talk about revenge spots. This is a Hugh Freeze Bowl if there ever was one, right? I mean, how much does Hugh Freeze want to win this game more than anything after his time at Ole Miss? Look, Auburn's on a 10-4 ATS run in this series with 3 straight covers. That aside, Auburn's offense is pretty pathetic. I mean, there's no other way around it. They finally snapped a streak where they were held to under 100 passing yards for 6 straight games against Power 5 opponents. So, that said, this is still an Auburn team, though, by the way, that pushed Georgia to the limit at home at Jordan-Hare. Night game at Auburn. This just feels like a really bad spot for Lane Kiffin coming off the bye. Like, doesn't this feel like the spot where, you know, Ole Miss's offense sort of sleepwalks through this thing? Auburn's still got a good run defense. They'll press, you know, this Ole Miss run game a little bit here and force them to be good. I like Auburn plus the points, guys. The problem here, and this is the way to play this, I would even say this. I would take Auburn in the first half plus the points. Why? Because if they're not keeping it close at halftime, guess what? They're not covering 6.5 the entire game. And, oh, by the way, when does Lane Kiffin ever take his foot off the gas pedal? Never. So I would play Auburn first half here with the points. If they can keep it close for the first 30 minutes, they likely would keep it close for the full game.
That's a good look, Mark Zeno, because when you think about what this Auburn Tigers team is dedicated to the ground, if they're going to shorten the window, if they're going to stay in the number, they kind of constantly have to be within that touchdown margin to have a chance of covering. An illustrious passing attack for Peyton Thorne and Robbie Ashford last week against LSU. 154 yards, but the first time north of the century mark against a Power 5 foe in six consecutive games dating back to last October. But it's a revenge spot for Hugh Freeze. Hide your cell phones, hide your wives on the plains in Jordan-Hare on Saturday night. Mark Zeno, your Army Black Knights against LSU. An interesting non-conference game in the SEC at this point of the season. The Bayou Bengals, a 29.5-point favorite. Mark, Jaden Daniels, the quarterback for LSU, is on pace to have one of the best quarterback seasons in the history of a single year in college football. It's north of a 4-touchdown number, Zeno, here in the final minute of this segment. What do you want to see out of LSU on Saturday night in Death Valley?
They don't hand the ball off once, period. Just have Malik Nabers run straight through the Army defense and be unguarded for 60 minutes. There's literally no reason for them to even try and run the football here. Most of these young men are going to, from the Black Knights and Army, are going to go on to be fine second lieutenants in the United States Army, and they're going to look fondly on their experience of going down to Baton Rouge for a game in Death Valley. And sometime down the road, they may be in combat looking back at it going, the last time I got my ass badly was when I went to Baton Rouge. So we hope that doesn't happen. But in reality, that's really how this thing is probably going to go.
I mean, you couldn't ask for a better breakdown. Donnie and I are not even going to try. We'll look at the rest of the college football slate for Saturday and week number 8 up next here with Zeno on TEL.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
So the mouth in the South gave you his SEC picks for the third Saturday in October. Now it's time for the rest of the country to enter the fold in week number 8. I'm Ben, he is Donnie, and Mark Zeno is the man in the middle. So Zeno, the best game of the weekend, a top 10 tilt in Columbus, 7th-ranked Penn State, 3rd-ranked Ohio State, a 4.5-point spread in favor of the Buckeyes in a game that might not only dictate the Big Ten Conference this season, but a college football playoff spot as well. Zeno, oftentimes in this series, it has not been decided by a single score. It's a 4.5-point number in favor of Ohio State, a team that has won 6 straight against Penn State. This year, Zeno, in 2023, with how good both of these teams are, will it be as close as that spread indicates on Saturday afternoon in Columbus?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it is going to be this close. But Ohio State's won 10 of 11 in this series, and Penn State hasn't won in Columbus since 2011. However, the Lions have covered 3 straight and 6 of 7 overall here. Penn State 6-0 straight up and against the number this year. And you're looking at a quarterback in Drew Aller who has yet to throw an INT. 9 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. That's going to be critical in this game for Penn State if they want to win it. I am looking at the under. I don't think there's any other way really to play this game. I think 47 is probably even too high to a certain extent. And this thing has come down. It was opened up at 48.5, somewhere in that range. But anything under, you know, if 47 is still out there, I'd jump on it. When you start getting into lower 40s, we're going to get a little bit nervous here. I would ask this much. When it comes to Ohio State, Ben, and we've gone over this week after week, outside of the fourth quarter against Maryland and the second half of the second quarter against Western Kentucky, I just haven't seen anything from this offense that makes me believe that they're going to be able to score. I trust the Ohio State defense within the limits of the earth at this point. They are really, really good. There is absolutely no doubt that Penn State is going to struggle to find the end zone here. But I just don't think Ohio State has anything offensively other than Marvin Harrison. If Penn State pulls out any game script, go pull out the game script that Notre Dame did and said, how do you take Marvin Harrison Jr. out of a game? And go do that same exact thing and force somebody else to beat you. I think the under comes in. I don't really know who wins this thing. I probably lean on taking the points with Penn State here, despite the fact that, it's not an ideal venue for them to play this game in. But still, I look at this thing overall and think the under is definitely coming in.
Mark, let me take a look at big picture here in the Big Ten. You take a look at the East, Michigan unbeaten at 4-0, Ohio State 3-0, and then, of course, Penn State 3-0. Is this a true eliminator game, or is there a chance that either A, if Ohio State loses, or B, Penn State loses, they can still find themselves back in the Big Ten championship game, in your opinion?
I mean, obviously, look, if Penn State loses this game, they're going to need Ohio State to lose to Michigan, right? And then at some point, Penn State is going to have to upset Michigan. You know, Penn State has the longer road here. They're going to have to split with Ohio State and Michigan to even have a chance at this whole thing here. And then they may even need some help after that. So when push comes to shove, the point simply is that Penn State has the longest, you know, the longest road here and the biggest hill to climb. And, you know, for all James Franklin and the good that he's done at Penn State, if he can't beat Michigan or Ohio State, have you really done any good, according to Penn State fans?
That is the task for Penn State, James Franklin, and the rest of the Nittany Lions. This year, with all the talent they have on both sides of the football, to take that step past Ohio State and past Michigan. Physicality has dictated these two games for the Nittany Lions against the Buckeyes and the Wolverines the last few years. But there is that scenario, Mark, where Ohio State hosts Penn State, Penn State hosts Michigan, Michigan hosts Ohio State in the game where all three of these teams could hand the other their only loss of the season. Even as Big Ten Ben, I haven't done the work necessary to dive into the tiebreakers of what that would mean for a Big Ten title. But the champion of the Big Ten Conference is going to come out of the East Division. So if you're going to bet Penn State, Ohio State, or Michigan to win the East, just bet them to win the Big Ten, because they're going to beat the team from the West that more than likely is going to be the Iowa Hawkeyes at this moment. That's where this stands. So, Zeno, we talked college football playoff national championship odds earlier in the show. Co-favorites for the first time this year, the Wolverines of Michigan and the Georgia Bulldogs. UGA having their price move back after the injury news around Brock Bowers. But, Zeno, as we focus on this top 10 tilt in the shoe on Saturday, Ohio State and Penn State, what is it going to mean for the race for a national championship overall for the entire country in college football?
Well, I think from an odds perspective, if Penn State could pull off the upset, right, you're going to see a lot of other major odds from teams drop just because it looks like Ohio State will be on the outside looking in at this point in time until another loss comes along for somebody else. So I think if you're looking for better odds, you kind of want Ohio State to win this thing because they'll continue to be a publicly bet team and a team that most people would look at that they think that has a chance to win this thing. So I'm kind of from that perspective hoping that Ohio State pull this thing off and not cover and keep it under 47.5 while I'm you know, lining my own pockets for that game. But still, I think that that's what really ultimately will happen here. If Ohio State wins this thing, you'll see the odds sort of remain and hold steady for teams like Florida State and Georgia and everybody else. Penn State wins it, everybody else is going to look a little bit better without Ohio State in the picture.
Mark, Doak Campbell takes center stage this Saturday night in the ACC. Duke versus Florida State. Roughly two touchdowns here as a favorite for Florida State. Do you have any information on Riley Leonard getting the start for Duke here? They looked impressive last week, at least on defense in their victory. But granted, going up against Florida State and NC State, completely different situations here. Talk to us about Duke and Florida State this weekend.
I mean, you mentioned it. Look, the real handicap here is whether Riley Leonard is going to play or not. We don't really know at this point in time. The in-game matchup itself to watch is the Florida State offense against the Duke defense. We know the Seminoles are more battle-tested. They have wins over LSU and Clemson. And it's fair to say that Florida State hasn't faced a defense statistically like Duke this year. But on the flip side, you can argue Duke hasn't played an offense worth a damn. Now, I know Notre Dame looked good on paper, but the Irish offense stalled against Power 5 opponents. Sam Hartman only threw for .126 against USC. And so is Duke's defense really as battle-tested as we believe it? Now, covering a touchdown is a completely different deal than winning this game. But here's the other thing. I think this low total here favors the fact that Duke will have to run the ball a ton regardless of whether Riley Leonard plays or not. And if Riley Leonard does play, is he truly 100%? I mean, if it's Henry Bellin or Bielan, however you say it, just 4-for-12 for 107 yards passing last week, that's not an offense you want to back at this point in time, especially against a Florida State defense that holds opponents to a 51% completion percentage. I know we need to get the status of Johnny Wilson for Florida State. Is he going to be back in this game? Their wide receivers are going to be incredibly tough to cover for this Duke defense. I don't think a 14.5 pops up, but if it does, I'll grab Duke immediately. I still think Duke has a way to keep this thing close, guys.
Listen, I think that 13.5 point spread is the line if Riley Leonard does not play. And Mike Elko did speak to reporters earlier this week about his starting quarterback, saying yet again he's progressing, he's getting healthier after the high ankle sprain that he suffered now 2 weeks ago against Notre Dame. Duke had a bye week. He didn't play last week against NC State. They drubbed the Wolfpack 24-3. The young Henry Beal in the fourth did play, threw a couple of touchdowns, but as Zeno said, not necessarily the best stat line you will ever see, 4 of 12. Where Florida State has been susceptible this year is on the ground. The Noles allowing 141 rushing yards per game, and we have seen them struggle with mobile quarterbacks. Jaden Daniels, Thomas Castellanos of BC, Kyron Drones of Virginia Tech, Riley Leonard has run for 88 or more rushing yards in the 3 games Duke has played against Power 5 competition. If he plays, it is close, and if he plays, I think we go over that total of 48.5. All right, Zeno. Now, a bounce-back spot for USC, not only based on last week after the loss in South Bend, the Trojans' perfect season coming to a close, but last year their only loss in the regular season was against Utah. And then they lost to the Utes once more in December in that Pac-12 title game. Last year, the difference, Utah's physicality. This year, we're not still sure if Utah is going to have Cameron Rising or not. I'm not so sure we're going to see Cam Rising play at all this season. It's under a touchdown in favor of Southern Cal. What resilience, Zeno, do you expect to see out of Lincoln Riley and company?
I mean, it might have been situationally the best spot for USC to take a loss, to have to come back home and play Utah in a revenge spot after last year. Guys, go back to that game in Salt Lake City last year. USC's offense racked up 556 yards. Caleb Williams threw for 381 and 5 touchdowns. That was against a Utah defense last year that was statistically the best in the Pac-12. Now, statistically this year, Utah's defense is the best in the Pac-12, but two things are different. One, they haven't faced a legit offense this season. The best offense that Utah's faced this year is Oregon State and DJ Uiagalelei. And the Utes were dominated in that game and only managed 7 points. Last year, Utah faced Anthony Richardson, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, Emory Jones. I think they were more battle-tested against USC in 2022. But the other component here is the Utah offense isn't as good this year as it was last year. In fact, this year, their offense stinks. It is dead last in yards per game at 322 and second to last in points at 21.7. Yep. I know USC's defense is bad, but guess what? You have to have some level of offense to be able to beat USC. And not only that, you have to play catch-up. So if last year USC could walk into Rice Eccles and drop 42 on the best defense in the conference, what are they going to do this year at home? The points they gave up last week against Notre Dame, the 3 touchdowns all came off Caleb Williams' interceptions, needed 9 plays and just 64 yards to do it. USC got in a hole they couldn't get out of. They eliminate the turnovers here. I think Lincoln Riley gets this fixed. It's a perfect spot here. I'm backing the Trojans, laying the 6.5 in a game, and I think they win by double digits.
Mark, looking at USC here in the Pac-12 standings, the only team with 4 wins so far in the Pac-12. But if we look going forward, they just lost to Notre Dame, a ranked team. They have a ranked Utah team coming up. Then they'll play Cal. And then Washington, Oregon, and UCLA currently all ranked here. Oof. What's the prognosis for the rest of the season for USC? Is it a legitimate chance they can make the Pac-12 championship? Or you just say to yourself, that defense is too much of an issue here. They're not going to be able to get it done.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I think Oregon presents a tougher challenge than Washington does for USC. Oregon gacked that game away, and I came on this show last week and said they should be able to keep Washington under 30, and they would have had Dan Lanning decided not to be the biggest putz in America and outthink himself in the room and not just punt the damn ball away and put his defense back on the field and make him go the full length of the field. I don't need to rehash what it did to my sanity and my wallet. Yeah. All that said, Oregon's defense, I think, will be a problem for USC. Washington won't be a problem. In a shootout, you know, you get these coin flip games, DRS, right, where both these teams can score. You know, you don't want to be in that situation against USC and Caleb Williams. I think it favors them slightly over Michael Penix in Washington. And Penix's injury status may, you know, really start to bubble to the surface here going forward to see how healthy he is this week. But Oregon, I still think, is the best team in the Pac-12, despite the fact that they took a really bad loss last week that they shouldn't have. And I would look at this thing a lot differently because Oregon, again, could get tripped up somewhere else before they have to play USC.
And listen, let's not forget, USC lost last week in South Bend, a significant game for the Trojans in their national championship chase, but it wasn't a conference loss. It's only the top two teams based on winning percentage that will play for a Pac-12 title the opening weekend in December. I wouldn't be surprised to see Washington and Oregon back there, having already played one another, and Washington getting the edge in that matchup. All right, guys, it is time to talk to your kids about top 25 and undefeated Air Force, the first in the Commander in Chief's Trophy Series of the 2023 season. Air Force, you know, a 10.5-point favorite against Navy. Now, the midshipmen have not looked great in the first year under Brian Newberry, but big injury news came out of Colorado yesterday. Air Force's quarterback, Zach Lerier, who was really good at doing everything in this triple option offense, is set to miss the next few weeks. Zeno, what does it mean for the matchup against Navy on Saturday?
What it means is that you, when anytime any service academies get together to play, you should just take the under and don't even think about it. 10-40-1 to the under since 2006 in service academy games. Don't overthink. Don't try to outsmart the room. Take the under.
35.5 is that total. Not even the smallest in FBS power football games this weekend. That would be Iowa and Minnesota. We're looking for history at at Kinnick Stadium. Anyway, we're back on TEL up next. Mark Zeno, thank you very much.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Rounding out hour number two of the Early Line Live right here on this Wednesday on Sports Grid. I am Ben. Donnie is here. So too is the Sports Grid app, the ultimate sports betting companion app, available for download at both the Apple and the Play Store. Available for download on your screen right there if you just scan the QR code. All of our insight and information in the palm of your hand right then, right there. Five-star plays all around the sports app. You can sync your bets with your favorite sports book. Of course, ours is the FanDuel Sportsbook here on TEL. And Donnie, so far in this postseason, I think it's pretty fair to say the two most impressive teams have been the Rangers, a perfect 7-0. They hold a 2-0 series advantage in the American League Championship Series. And the Phillies on the other side, knocking out baseball's best team, Atlanta, for a second consecutive year. The Phillies have won 7 of their 8 games so far in this Red October run. And they also hold a 2-0 series lead in the National League Championship Series. So of those two that have a 2-0 series lead in the LCS, who has been the most impressive? That was the question in Fade the Public. Listen, it's a tough question, right? It's like picking between your two favorite kids. Which team's postseason run has been more impressive, Philadelphia or Texas? Right now, DRS, most of the public going with the Phillies, 57%. But again, when you think about what Texas has done, 7 games, 7 wins, 6 on the road, the Rangers certainly deserve all of the credit as well.
It's like, what have you done for me lately? If yesterday Texas had won 10-0, they probably would have led this poll here. But the fact that the Phillies won 10-0 last night, that's where you're going to leave it. And also maybe household superstar names, much more apparent here on the Phillies right now. You'll get to know some of those superstars on the Texas Rangers if they do make the World Series. But I agree with the public here. 57% on the Phillies right now. That's the way I voted as well. And again, maybe it's just what we saw last night carries over to this morning.
Game 3 in the ALCS. Hour number 3 starts live right here on the Early Line in 55 seconds. Come back and join us.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.